This is Cloak and Dagger, a podcast about OSINT, technology, and global conflict. I'm MJ Benias. This podcast is powered by Sapper Labs Group. For more, visit www.sapperlabs.com. For listeners, in the last episode, we talked a bit about a Russian diplomat named Kirill Kalinin.
And then, of course, there are propaganda agents within those embassies. In Canada, we had an agent named Kirill Kalinin, who was operating inside of the Russian embassy in Ottawa up until around, I think it was 2018, when he was PNG'd pitching disinformation stories to whoever would listen in Canada, but to journalists.
One of the more famous things he discussed was the Canadian involvement in the World Anti-Doping Agency regarding Russia's doping scandal at the Sochi Games, as well as other Olympic events and other sporting events. So let's get into it. You are somehow connected to this story in an interesting way, and I thought this would be a fun sort of bonus episode for the listeners of Cloak and Dagger. So first, tell people who you are, and then we'll take it from there.
My name is David McMahon. I'm the Chief Intelligence Officer of Sapper Labs, and I also have a background in elite sports.
So you are you have an intelligence background and a sporting background. So this seems like the perfect sort of little episode to put together. Yeah. Can you talk about sort of your connection to this? Like, let's get into it.
Yeah, I'm tied into this sort of Olympic story a number of different ways. One is from the intelligence side and looking at the Olympics, as Olympics is essentially an interesting event. It's probably the highest risk, riskiest event out there that one can participate in, or a country that puts on. It's sort of the Olympics is a target-rich, threat-heavy environment. So all the bad actors are there, all the good actors are there, and then you have this whole spectacle that's going on, for the world to view. So there's just a lot going on from a security and intelligence point of view, as well from the sporting event. So from an intelligence and security point of view, it's always like a big deal in terms of doing threat assessments, at following what's going on prior to the Olympics, stopping attacks, potential attacks that could happen at the Olympics, and all the nefarious activities. On the other end of the coin, I approach it from the sporting side. So both my wife and I have been part of the Olympic movement for quite some time in terms of elite sport. My wife was a two-time Olympian. I was on the national team for biathlon, so that's skiing and shooting, for a number of years. So we are sort of participating in from that perspective. And in the middle of this, we see what's going on. So as I mentioned before, the nefarious activities that would happen at the Olympics. And of course, on the sporting side, we'd see the doping aspect, and specifically the state-sponsored doping. And what's interesting to understand, for listeners, is that we in the West see doping as purely a sports recreational problem. But doping is really being part of a state-sponsored program of soldier enhancement for most other countries. It's part of their power base in terms of, whether it's winning wars, and most of the wars have been won, using drugs in a lot of cases, whether you look at the Nazis and use of methamphetamines, look at a lot of the other use. And part of the Russians and Chinese, for that matter, is their sporting systems are intricately linked with their military system. So if you're an elite athlete, you're in the military. And that's usually, in Canada, we put it as part of heritage, but most other countries put it as part of the military. And as part of the military, in terms of elite performance, these folks are generally in the special forces. They're usually wrapped into some, if you're especially Eastern Bloc, it'd be notably wrapped into illegal or performance-enhancing drug program, which is very closely tied to their soldier enhancers programs.
So there's a lot to unpack here. So let's get into sort of the first idea that you discussed about the fact that the Olympics themselves, in that you have a whole bunch of people from a whole bunch of different countries kind of gathering in one spot, I can imagine from an intelligence perspective, that's a rich place to gather data. And it's also a rich place to sort of lose data and give up data accidentally to a foreign power. This is funny, I guess, for a listener. I mean, when you think about the listeners, like a lot of them would never think, you watch the Olympics on TV. No one's thinking about the whole intelligence side behind this, that the Olympics are this large kind of tradecraft event. So what are the kind of the things that occur, especially kind of more in more modern days where people are online, people bring their laptops, their tablets, all their tech, their phones to the Olympic Games? What kind of stuff is being collected? What is kind of interest? What is Canada as a country watching out for when it comes to who's being spied on? What's being taken? Let's kind of talk about that. Like, let's talk about kind of the nitty gritty here of the intelligence game that the Olympics is.
Yeah. So there's the intelligence game, you know, from a foreign intelligence perspective. There's also the criminal intelligence and the security intelligence going on. And of course, from Canada, we're mostly focused on the security intelligence side. So most of our intelligence would be finding out what threat actors are up to. Because what happens is you have all these bad actors that you may be looking at all around the world are now coming to the Olympics, because that's the place to be if you're going to do bad stuff. Also, all the heads of states are showing up there. So if you're a country and you're looking at foreign intelligence collection of heads of state and economic leaders and things, that they're all going to be there as well. So, you know, everyone that you're looking at of persons of interest, bad or good or otherwise, are now sort of coming to the same spot in the same itsy bitsy little time. So same location, same time, same place. So you had to just have a concentration of people looking, you know, and everyone also is looking at everyone else in terms of countries. And in the middle of this, everyone's trying to keep their athletes safe, because we don't really want, repeat of athletes getting injured at the Olympics or taken hostage or things like this. So every country is looking after their own interests. And then you have organized crime that's trying to make a buck. And you have all this sort of going on at the same time. And it gets a little muddled when you start everyone's heat crossing over and you have your people running around doing all this sort of interesting stuff. So it tends to be a bit like Casablanca in the Second World War. You just have a whole bunch of nefarious actors doing all sorts of interesting things, and then people trying to find out, you know, what's going on about each other and about, you know, nation state. So, I mean, you would have, for example, we have a notable case of Russia monitoring, you know, and Russia and China setting up, you know, very vast mass surveillance regimes around the Olympics, and then world leaders end up in that, or athletes end up in that environment. And of course, every phone call and every email they send is now being monitored, because they're walking in that mass surveillance environment. So that's what we have to be worried about, especially if we're going to certain places and competing in certain countries.
Let's switch gears to the case of the Sochi Games and the doping scandal that occurred as a result of that. We mentioned Kirill Kalinin, and you also mentioned how this has ties to, especially for China and Russia, their elite athletes are tied to the military or the intelligence services there. So let's get into it. Who was Kirill Kalinin, and I guess what happened, and let's sort of move on from there.
Yeah, well, there was a bunch of things that sort of starting from, you know, let's say just before the Sochi Olympics, we started to hear a lot of rumblings about, you know, out of Russia about how they're going to set up this surveillance regime, and how that games was going to be the biggest, baddest, you know, games there. And don't try to do anything, you know, don't try to carry out any terrorist activity, because it's going to be heavy, heavy security. And we saw the massive amount of money poured in security and that sort of effect. So this was sort of alarming. So we raised the alarm with athletes and the government and coaches, and say, hey, you know, just be aware that if you're coming there as a coach or an athlete, that don't bring your own devices. Don't say certain things, don't do certain things, because everything, you're going to be sitting in a fishbowl. Everything you do is going to be monitored. Everywhere you go, you're going to be watched. And so that was sort of the precautionary message that we sent out. In fact, I ended up putting out an op-ed in the Globe and Mail about that. Now, at the same time, we knew that the Russians were having difficulty. So they're overinflating their capabilities in a way. but they were leaking it. They were essentially, you know, their capabilities, their plans were sort of being leaked deliberately. So they're giving this idea that they're creating this regime, but not directly. And we sort of wondered why. And part of it was essentially a precautionary message to terrorist organizations and others not to come there. That being said, we put out this op-ed, and that garnered a fair bit of attention. So within a week of me putting that op-ed out in Globe and Mail, I ended up getting inquiries from local GRU agents in Ottawa that were looking for me, looking to have a discussion with me. It was a bit of a turned out to be a bit of a awkward recruitment effort for you know, myself and the company I was working with to actually participate in what they're doing and in the security, you know, provide security consulting services for the Olympics, which we politely declined. And we also told them that we knew that they were having some difficulty in their security was not as good as they were saying. I wasn't about to reveal that to the world because I think it was in the best interest of the athletes to put on a bit of a facade that the security was better than it was to keep the athletes safe. At the same time, I was warning the athletes of the surveillance infrastructure that was being put in place. Now, out around during the Olympics, we started to see like essentially unbridled or unmitigated state-sponsored support to doping, including the security services being actively involved, the intelligence service actively involved in Sochi, in hiding doping efforts, in supporting those sorts of things as well. There was a bunch of investigative reports that were being done at the same time, and actually a documentary came out called Icarus a little bit later on. But we started seeing this, and this was then brought to a lot of the security community started seeing this as well as the athletes and everything. And so there was a lot of buzz in the air, a lot of smoke. So we started looking for fire. We started finding it. There was some large exposés that were done in German newspapers. And WADO eventually became aware that this was a much more serious effort around the Sochi Olympics. And so they launched an investigation.
Unprecedented announcement today from the International Olympic Committee. Russia has been banned from the Winter Olympics in Korea.
Well, that caused, you know, a bit of a controversy within Russia.
The ban means Russia as a country will not be represented at this winter's games.
When Russia hosted the 2014 Winter Olympics, it was systematically doping its athletes, which in a way I totally understand, right? I mean, you don't want your Olympic team getting beaten in your own country. That would be horrible. It'd be like Beyonce showing up to do karaoke at your birthday party. You'd be there like, yeah, no, she's really talented, whatever. I mean, yeah. I mean, I was going to sing that song, but whatever.
And Russia threw everything at them. So we started to see remote hacking attempts, doxing, disinformation, operations, intimidation. The whole aspect, we saw them actually launching close access operations. So following members of WADA around in Europe, you know, with in the hotel room next door, trying to, you know, so they eventually got in, the Russians got into their cell phones and their laptops and their back-end servers. And then they started essentially manipulating the information, making it look like other athletes were involved. So they essentially did a huge number on them. And as we started going, the investigation started ramping up. Witnesses for this, witnesses in Russia started going missing as well. So this is part of the whole sort of dirty tricks that was going on at the same time. So we saw this whole thing sort of unfold. And then later on, a lot of it came out in terms of indictment that the Justice Department put out, and it's in great detail in terms of what was happening in the background. But for a lot of us that in the security industry and the sports, you know, the sports world, we're starting to see this sort of game being played out to a different level.
It was pretty extreme from what I understand. And even just from what I remember when it happened, I remember there were a lot of Russian athletes who lost their medals because, it was proven that they were taking some sort of, doping regimen and getting all cocktailed up. And ultimately, I know there was a lot of pushback from the Russians. So we then get this interesting cat named Kirill Kalinin, who's a Russian diplomat in Canada, and he starts seeding stories to journalists as well as on social media from from this alleged sort of leak of data that came out of WADA, and they were hacked basically by a Russian GRU unit, from what I understand.
Yeah.
And they extracted a whole bunch of data. It was emails and like Excel spreadsheets and even some text messages, etc. And from what I understand, it was then all kind of taken apart, and then they cut up the pieces that they needed and then started stitching them together to make it look like there was some sort of conspiracy at play where Canada, as well as other nations, were conspiring against Russia so that those athletes would lose their medals. And the conspiracy wasn't the Russian doping. The conspiracy was the world's fake and artificial belief that Russia was doping its athletes. Is that sort of the gist of what happened?
Oh, exactly. One of the things that what they were doing was essentially, as you said, manipulating the information and as well as making some stuff up to make, you know, Western athletes look bad, implicate them in things that they just weren't, responsible for, and then turn heads. I mean, it was straight sort of psychological projection in terms of we're not doing anything wrong. It's everyone else is out to get us. And it was so over the top because it was so blatant. We had eyewitnesses. We had essentially in the Icarus documentary that I referred to, you know, the doctor that was in charge of Russian doping came out and defected. They went after him. There was apparently some hit teams that went after him as well. So he went into the witness protection program. And everything he's saying was right on, because we knew of him. We knew the Russian programs, mostly, you know, as an athlete. We had the Russian training programs. We knew of the Russian doping programs, especially after the fall of the Berlin Wall. Those were all revealed. I trained with Russian athletes on a regular basis, especially in retirement. They would talk about what they did and what they were forced to do. Most of those athletes were special forces, Spetsnaz operatives. So we sort of, you know, we all knew. And so it became a little bit incredulous for them to say that. But, I mean, they're trying to, you know, mostly influence what happens the inside of Russia, and fake sort of disbelief that this could be happening. But it's also what was particularly interesting was the degree to which they threw all of their, I would say, state power behind it. Like, you know, it would be almost inconceivable that, you know, we would throw our own military behind supporting doping operations and then go after, you know, like not-for-profits and other athletes and things like this, like in ways not just disinformation, but like physical intimidation and everything like that. It's a little bit odd for the regular Canadian to put their mind around that.
Yeah, and I want to get to this. So again, just for the listeners, if you haven't listened to the last episode, Kirill Kalinin eventually gets basically expelled from Canada in 2017. Yep. And that was, it was not related to the doping issue. It was actually related to a whole other situation where FSB murdered an ex-Russian intelligence officer on British soil. And then so Canada, as a result, expelled sort of a handful of Russian ambassadors, Kalinin being one of them. And that's sort of where the story kind of ends for us here. But I want to touch base regarding this kind of concept of the way Russia thinks about itself and the connection of sports to, let's say, national power, military power, and that idea. So we have a situation, as you just said, where doping is occurring. Russia needs to paint a picture inside its own state that this is a conspiracy against it. It throws the full force of its military intelligence community, cyber capabilities as well, into addressing this issue. Why are they so intense? Why does Russia engage in this? And why is sports, especially elite sports like this, tied so heavily to this kind of national identity of Russia as a state?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's very foreign to us. Until you go over there, you find out that they're all in the military. They do their military service. If you're an elite athlete, you're in the military service in their sports brigades or special forces units. And especially like my sport, which is biathlon, skiing or shooting, the Second World War winter campaigns were won skiing and shooting in Finland and in Russia. A lot of the Blitzkrieg was fueled on meth. So it's, it's, you know, these two things are linked to state power and winning wars. And that just sort of progressed, you know, in that sort of mindset. And, you know, in the mindset of folks like Putin, everything, it is, I mean, Olympics was essentially put in place as a replacement for war. So we would compete instead of like, instead of conflict. And I don't think that distinction was ever really made in certain countries. I mean, they view it as a warfare from a different name, you know, and they take it extremely seriously, and Putin takes it very seriously. And so, you know, to us in the West, it's leisure activity. It's something we watch as entertainment. For them, it's like they have a very long memory in terms of how crucial it was for national identity, but also national security and survival. So these things have never been taken out of sort of a military state powered context, and everything goes in to support it. Like everything lines up behind those, whether you're an astronaut or you're an Olympic athlete, you know, the country lines up behind you and to support those medals or those victories.
And I guess it doesn't help, especially from a sort of an inside Russian, internal kind of Russian nationalism or how the public inside Russia views the situation. The entire world outside of Russia knows Russia dopes its athletes and essentially cheats to win. However, inside Russia, the Russian population is I guess, so misinformed, purposefully disinformed to believe that rather Russia stands alone as this sort of sovereign hero, and the rest of the world is trying to tear him down and drag him into the muck with the rest of us. Is this kind of like the mindset of the Russian public? Not ever, that's a generalization, but the mindset of sort of a chunk of the Russian public that believes kind of in the glory of Mother Russia?
I think so. I mean, there's always this, I mean, at the elite level, there's always been this notion of sort of a, you know, the perfect race or the superior race, you know, that sort of, thread runs through it. And, you know, and that's sort of seen in terms of like how many medals you get at the Olympics compared with other, you know, how you perform, you know, people buy into that as well. I think like everyone, you know, all countries have doping issues associated with them. And so if you're in Russia, you can point to that and say, oh, well, look at this, look at that, you know, look at Lance Armstrong, look at this, you know, but it's just not to the same degree. You know, it's not so systematic and obligatory, widespread, systemic, like from, you know, from a young age all the way up, you know, to the detriment of a lot of the athletes. I mean, a lot of the athletes like are just grow up into it and don't know any better. And then some of the other experimental stuff that they're into is just, you know, mind-boggling, you know, to us in the West. So I think they rationalize I think the population there may rationalize it, saying this is what you have to do, you know, in competition, and they realize it, and they rationalize it by saying that everyone's doing it, but it's just not the same degree, and certainly we're not, you know, putting our full force of the Russian intelligence services and the military behind, you know, dirty tricks and winning.
Listen, this was great, Dave. Thanks so much for coming on and putting this sort of episode together with me. It's kind of an interesting, weird world to come from an episode where we talked about literally like Russian dissidents getting assassinated and disinformation and Marcus Kolga's kind of research into this and how you kind of bring in this kind of other interesting side of just diving a little bit more into what happened with the doping and the cyber war that occurred as a result, and just kind of trying to keep security during massive sporting events like the Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, the same folks that were involved, you know, what Marcus was saying, were the same group involved in WADA, you know, and the Olympic scandals. You know, they just sort of pivoted off to do, you know, one target to another target. And, you know, it's interesting how it sort of all sort of comes together.
Well, thanks very much, Dave. I appreciate your time.
Welcome. Cheers.
A special thanks to Dave McMahon for chatting with me on this bonus episode of Cloak & Dagger. And a quick shout out to Sapper Labs Group. For more information about the products and services offered by Sapper Labs, make sure you visit their website at www.sapperlabs.com. If you like Cloak & Dagger, it really helps if you subscribe to the show. Give it a rating and even a review. You can find more information about us as well as our weekly news updates and articles at www.cloakanddagger.blog. I'm MJ Banais. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you back here next week.